Welcome to the Outthinker Podcast. Each week, we talk with forward-looking strategists and innovators that are challenging the status quo, leading the future of business, and shaping our world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of the Outthinker Strategy Network.
Competitive lines are being redrawn, values being redefined, companies are dying younger. And what that means for our listeners today is that we have to master the new logic of competition. It's no longer just about companies versus companies. It's cultures versus cultures and mindsets versus mindsets. So for example, a new human metric would be ROI, not return on investment, but return on intelligence, return on imagination. New human metrics, cognitively enabled, human-led, tech-enabled organizations.
That was Terrence Mowry, founder of the management think tank Hack the Future Lab. Terrence challenges leaders to pivot from wait and see to explore and disrupt in a world of complexity and uncertainty. He believes that building a bold and resilient future never happens by accident. If you know me, you know I'm passionate about understanding the language and mindsets that enable people to operate in and shape the future. And as you just heard in the highlighted clip, Terrence is a deep, thoughtful study of just that. Terrence is a best-selling author, a visiting professor at IE Business School. His recent publications include co-authoring Thinkers 50's Certain Uncertainty and Building Resilient Organizations, which I also got a chance to contribute to. In this episode, we sat down and had a conversation drawing from his ideas in his publications, including what unlearning is and why it is so important. How excess bureaucracy and complexity are often significant barriers for senior leaders to unlearn. Why we must prioritize context over control, embrace autonomy over accountability, and foster cultures of curiosity rather than conformity. Why companies should avoid the trap of overestimating the risk of trying something new while underestimating the risk of standing still. Ladies and gentlemen, Terrence Mowry. All right, Terrence, it's great to have you on the podcast. I know we've been trying to get you here for a while. Thanks for sitting down to talk to us.
Thank you so much. Excited to be with you.
So I want to start with two questions that I always start with. The first is if you could complete this sentence for me. If you really know me, you know that.
If you really know me, you know that I used to be a DJ in my 20s.
Really?
And I actually DJed around the world with some great people, and it was an incredible time, yes.
Wow. Where were you based when you were a DJ?
So I was based out of London, but I DJed across New York, Sydney, Stockholm. And it was an incredible time to really discover different cultures and travel. And it was what I call an imprintable moment in my life, which I'll never forget.
Amazing. I met a DJ recently. He would DJ in the other life, but he said it's hard for him to go to clubs now because he's a DJ snob. When he sees a DJ, he can tell they're not really a DJ.
Yes, it's true. I mean, first of all, I don't go to clubs anymore, unfortunately. I actually got tinnitus from the DJing. And so I live with that. It doesn't take over my life. With DJing, it was a great opportunity to really appreciate the importance of spontaneity and being fully present, and of course, performance as well.
Yes, I can see how those can apply to your work and research. Second question, I ask this of everyone, I always get a different answer. What's your definition of strategy?
My definition is leading and embracing perpetual beta. And this takes its inspiration from a word called henka, a Japanese word, which means more than strategy. It's about transcendence. Henka is kind of like this perpetual state of evolution. So thinking and learning, but also addressing the blind spot, or what I call the dogs that don't bark, which is rethinking and unlearning. So to recap, it's this perpetual state of beta, so sustaining vitality for the short term, but for the long term as well. And henka is this Japanese word. So it's kind of like continuous evolution. It's transcendence.
Got it. Fascinating. Yeah. So the ongoing unlearning and relearning.
Exactly. I think, yeah, the idea behind that is as business models erode faster, as our assumptions about the world lose their validity faster as well, we have to update ourselves more frequently, not just at an individual human level, but an enterprise level as well. So that's sort of embracing that spirit of perpetual beta, learning and unlearning the always done way is a really important thing. And it's a blind spot for most leaders.
Right. Yeah, this is a question I was going to ask a little bit later, but I know that you write about and talk about this idea of unlearning. I think I understand what that is. Can you explain what that is and why is that particularly important today?
Such a great question. I mean, a really important point is that as the rate of change accelerates, and let's face it, today's one of the slowest moments in our lifetime, the idea of unlearning is that old processes, old ways of thinking, old assumptions around the world, old proxies are decaying faster. We're moving from hero to zero, 3x faster than we were 10 years ago. So the idea of unlearning is the proxy becomes the thing. The process becomes the thing. You know, 1 in 3 meetings is considered a complete waste of time. For every 1,000 people going to a meeting that's considered a complete waste of time, that's costing them around $20 million in lost productivity. So unlearning is really a mindset to say, look, let's look at the enterprise. You know, elimination is one of the finest forms of optimization. And our brains have a brain bias against subtraction. We're very good at adding complexity to complexity. Michele Zanini, who I met recently, great guy with Gary Hamel. They speak about BMI, not body mass index, bureaucratic mass index. So unlearning is really identifying the barriers to strategy. You know, what's getting in the way of strategy? Is it too much complexity, too much bureaucracy, fragmented alignment around the strategic priorities? Unlearning is really challenging outdated orthodoxy. It could be a very practical action as well. I worked with one global pharma leader. They've created an unlearning platform. So once a quarter, folks from all over the world get together virtually to share stories of practical unlearning in action. It could be a process that's no longer working, that's no longer functioning. It could be a best practice that's become a broken practice. Let's face it, we protect lots of broken practices that are no longer viable. I'm really talking about what was the unlearning? Why did they need to unlearn? What did they actually physically do? What was it automated, augmented, replaced, updated, or simply neutralized? I really celebrate it and codify it. Creating a culture of humility, which is code for unlearning, is a really important thing. Because most organizations are trapped in outdated ways of thinking. And that's all because that becomes a strategy killer.
Yes. So I can see that a senior leader would understand the need to unlearn. And you've given a very specific example of something they could put in place to continually unlearn. But in your experience, what comes up? Because we also had Vijay Govindarajan on, and he has his third box of his three boxes. And it comes up a lot. But since you spend so much time with senior leaders, what is the barrier that prevents them from actually doing it? And how do you address that?
The big one is bureaucracy. For example, the US tax code, the number of words has gone from 400,000 to 4 million in the last 10 years. I recently did some work with another organization. They had over 40,000 different job titles, including head of uncertainty, distraction prevention coach, and innovation sherpa. That creates a hell of a lot of complexity and confusion. Bureaucracy, excess bureaucracy, because of course, every industry has complexity, regulatory challenges. But excess bureaucracy is a strategy killer, because if you're spending a disproportionate amount of your strategic thinking on fighting bureaucracy and complexity, you simply have less time, less bandwidth for the strategic doing from the execution. And I can share a story of that in real life.
Yeah, please.
I recently worked with the CEO. We were looking at the alignment of 5 strategic priorities. The initial survey was very positive. It came up at around 98% alignment. What I mean by that is the 100 extended leadership team of 100 leaders had alignment. They had high clarity on what those 5 strategic priorities were. But when we dug deeper, actually only 1 in 4 leaders could explain clearly a minimum of 3 of the strategic priorities. And 1 in 3 could not name any of the strategic priorities. This is called strategic certainty. Strategic certainty, the ability to translate the rhetoric into milestones and actions. And so I think this is where we need to unlearn. And what I mean by that is going big on context setting, pace setting, direction setting, going big on fighting complexity, not with complexity, but with simplicity, going big on elimination as the ultimate form of optimization. And that means being more visible and visceral at letting go, rejecting the always done ways and the taken for granted norms that many leaders are still operating by, but are no longer viable.
Got it. Can you just tell us a little bit more about context settings? I read something where you used the term context over control.
Yes, absolutely. You know, 2 inflection points here. Competitive lines are being redrawn, values being redefined, companies are dying younger. And what that means for our listeners today is that we have to master the new logic of competition, but also we have to master a sort of new logic of leadership. And what I mean by this is mindset shifts. It's no longer just about companies versus companies. It's cultures versus cultures and mindsets versus mindsets. So for example, a new human metric would be ROI, not return on investment, but return on intelligence, return on imagination. New human metrics, cognitively enabled, human-led, tech-enabled organizations. So these mindset shifts, there's three or four, including context over control, this idea that people want autonomy and accountability. We need to go big on really giving people flexibility, autonomy, and trust.
Right. I read this somewhere. You can't have accountability without choice. If you force someone to do something, they're no longer accountable to it. But if they choose, then they become accountable.
Yes, exactly. This is the central pillar of this more human-centric approach to leadership. So context over control. Another example would be curiosity over conformity. The research coming out of Hack Future Lab shows that most cultures are actually cultures of conformity. Once you get to 500 people or more, culture of conformity rejects ideas that challenge the status quo. A culture of curiosity embraces ideas that challenge the status quo. And so a really important question for leaders to think about today as they listen to us is, do they have cultures of curiosity or conformity? You'd be surprised at how many are actually more towards cultures of conformity.
Yeah, they might not admit it, but if you asked and you looked at behaviors, what does a career ladder look like then in this type of context? How does career change?
Career ladders have become liquid. It's no longer linear. And what I mean by that is internal mobility, a horizontal hiring, work pixelization. It could be jumping onto different career paths over a 100-year life. I caught up with Professor Linda Grattan recently.
From London Business School, I think.
That's right. She's written a great book called The 100-Year Life. This idea of a portfolio sort of approach to career, jumping onto different career paths. And some interesting research coming out of Hack Future Lab as well is, you know, the number one reason why talent walks out of the door after money is a lack of internal growth opportunity. 76% of people believe there are more growth opportunities outside of the existing company that they're working in. So there's so much lost talent, wasted talent in organizations costing trillions of dollars a year. I think the war for talent is over, by the way. Talent won.
I love that. Yeah, no, and then I see how that links to the return on intelligence and return on integrity as opposed to exclusively return on investment. Another thing that jumps out from your work for me, and maybe this is related to unlearning, but you talk about the risk of standing still. We had Sally Sussman here, and she talked about looking at the cost of inaction. In her case, it was a different context. It was the war in Ukraine, and you as a company, how are you going to respond to it, and how to make the right ethical and business decisions. And she talked as well as about the cost of inaction. Can you talk to us a little bit about what do you mean by the risk of standing still?
Change used to happen as a breeze. Now it feels like a category 5 typhoon. And so what that means, that creates headwinds and tailwinds. And I think one of my reflections over the last 10 years is that we always overestimate the risk of trying something new and underestimate the risk of standing still. So I'll give you an example of that. You know, I did some work recently with Hermes. It's got a 180-year history. It's had to reinvent itself multiple times, like a phoenix coming out of the ashes. So this idea of reimagination as the new execution is a really important deal for leaders to think about in terms of strategic readiness. And what Hermes have done is they've looked out, they've zoomed out to the future, 5, 10 years ahead, even 30 years ahead, and said, look, what does that world look like? We have these new emerging technologies, for example, generative AI, smart mobility. We obviously have sustainability as a big driver as well of change. So what do we need to do as a business model to sustain vitality for the long term, to focus not just on return on investment, but return on intelligence? And one of the big moves at Hermes is they've partnered with a biotech company called MycoWorks, and they're looking at mycelium. It's an alternative to leather. And their bold move is that by 2030, at least 50% of revenue should come from mycelium-based leather. So this is an example of an organization not waiting for the future to arrive, but leading from the future, not the present.
Yes. In my talks, I almost always start with this idea of talking from the future. We have Gary Hamel on, you know, he talks about that. Anyway, another big concept is zooming out into 10 years and zooming in. John Hagel, what's your articulation of the argument for why you should be doing that planning from the future?
It's so easy to lead from the present or lead from the past. I see two types of operating environments, complicated. What I mean by complicated is linear-based, rules-based, more predictable. We're now operating in a complex environment. And what I mean by that is fluid, non-linear, unpredictable. So now we have a kind of macro environment, polycrisis, perma crisis, predictably unpredictable. And that means that business models are at risk more than ever. You know, here's the scary truth. Your next biggest competitor in the next 5 years could come from an adjacent industry to yours. This is the new meta. Nothing to do with Facebook. This is where competitive lines are being redrawn. And so it makes sense to start asking yourself, what do we need to do to lead from the future? And I saw this happen in action with DBS, the Development Bank of Singapore, where Peyush Gupta, he got into a cab and he said, take me to DBS. And the cab driver laughed and he said, DBS, you mean damn bloody slow. You know, sometimes you can't beat some instant feedback from a customer. And this idea that customers were calling DBS damn bloody slow became a kind of strategic calling for Peyush Gupta, the CEO of DBS, to pivot to the future. And it really focused on three stages. Number one was aligning around a point of view of that future. So this idea of platformization, automation, digitization, how do we harness these as tailwinds? Number two was aligning, really articulating that clearly and saying, how do we need to adapt the core of what we do within our business strategically, operationally, to leverage this as a tailwind for value creation? And then number three was activation, light speed activation. What I mean by light speed activation is learning at the speed of the customer, crushing bureaucracy, sharpening the purpose and value agenda. And no surprise, 10 years today, DBS has won Future Ready Bank of the Year 3 times in the last 10 years.
Wow. So how do you do that third one? I'm reading a book right now on Winston Churchill, and they were talking about how overnight after he became prime minister, suddenly the pace and urgency by which the government worked, you'd see, I think the term was respectable government servants running down the hallways with paper. How did they, or how does one do that third piece of activating that urgency?
There's some really interesting research coming out of the world of anthropology, looking at 3 types of people you need to really create a movement with pace and urgency. And my ongoing research shows that there are 2 types of companies. Some companies respond to adversity and kind of survive adversity, but some use adversity as a platform to get smarter, to get faster, to get more agile, and to be nimbler and more resilient. And basically, there are 3 types of people from the world of anthropology that I think are really directly powerful to any chief strategy officer listening to us today. Number one, you need agitators. An agitator is somebody who has the courage to reject the status quo, to reject the taken for granted norms or the assumptions that no longer hold true. You need agitators across the business, vertically and horizontally, and this should be led by the top. Number two is you need innovators, people who can prototype new ways of thinking, new ways of working. And then finally, you need orchestrators. And these are the big influential people across the business that can really scale up and sustain that strategic and value agenda with urgency and with pace. So agitators, innovators, and orchestrators are 3 types of mindsets to think about in terms of activation.
I love that. That is super helpful. So now I'm imagining those 3 types of people activating this collaboration. And we have this growth in collaboration, smaller teams, more interactions, you know, and it creates this cognitive overload challenge. We had a guest that showed that every interaction that you have with someone creates some kind of micro stress, and that can really build. So how do you help companies, or how do you suggest companies move to this more decentralized model, which means a lot more interaction, but avoiding these cognitive costs?
You know, trust is the way. This idea that in trust we thrive, in trust we win. I had a great fireside chat just a couple of weeks ago with Amy Edmondson. She's got a new book coming out, The Right Side of Wrong. And we spoke at length about intelligent failure and about this challenge. And it's really about going at a more granular level around trust, breaking down trust into accelerants. So for example, challenger trust. A great question for a leader to ask themselves is, when's the last time I was challenged? I had a debate. Often it's very difficult for senior leaders to come up with a recent example of that. And that could be a warning sign that we have cultures of silence, play to lose, rather than cultures of courage, play to win. So challenger trust is really important. Another idea would be no fail trust. No fail trust is everybody's talking about failure, but let's face it, often we're hardwired to avoid it. It's a badge of shame, not a badge of honor. So really going big on creating cultures where people can fail intelligently, celebrate those failures and learn from them. Another example would be team trust. What I mean by that is look at the different culture types in the team. I recently did some work in Riyadh where there were 27 different nationalities in the studio, different mindsets, different cultures, and a very different interpretation of what to expect from a leader. Some want more directive leadership, some want autonomy. And that creates a whole new layer of complexity leaders need to navigate around. So I think, you know, take inspiration, not just from leadership or management, but from anthropology, from social sciences, because actually that way you really create an expansive framework you can tap into to address these challenges. And don't make it prescriptive. Every culture, every team is as unique as the fingerprint on my finger.
No, I love that your work is so grounded in science and other fields. I have tons of questions. We're reaching the top of our time with you. What's something that you didn't get to say or I didn't ask that I should have asked?
I think everything starts as an act of imagination. But for leaders to sustain vitality for the long term, they need to practice reimagination. And, you know, if you think about it, knowledge tells you what is, and that's important. And we are addicted to knowledge and certainty. But reimagination or imagination tells you what could be. And that's the source of future readiness and growth. And really to define it as a final call to action, it's the curiosity to learn. It's the courage to unlearn. It's the clarity to focus, laser-like focus, because attention is the new oil. And it's the conviction to decide.
Awesome. Thank you. How can people continue to learn from you? Certainly finding your books. You've got an amazing podcast. There's lots of content out there, but what is the best way for people to stay in touch with you?
I'll give two things. So number one, my website, www.terrencemowry.com.
Great. We'll put that in the notes.
Number two would be LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn in terms of sharing research, insights, frameworks that really bring leadership to life in a visceral way, that bring strategy to life in a visceral way. So these would be my two takeaways today that folks can connect with and stay in touch with me and be part of the thriving community.
Thanks for sharing those with us. Thanks for the work that you do, for taking some time to unpack it. And we really do encourage people to continue following you and learning from you. Thank you.
Been a pleasure, Kyan. Thank you.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our producers, Karina Reyes and Zach Ness, our editor, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kaihan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week with another episode of Outthinkers.